Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. An international air traffic body says South Sudan's airspace is not safe.
There could be some incidents, but we're operating our flights normally, like the other airlines. But if there is any issue with ATC, the machines and everything, we normally report it to the civil aviation in the airport authorities.
And a fire burns down hardware stores in a market in South Sudan's capital, Juba.
There is a policeman who slept there. He has called me and he told me there is a fire. We just started just our neighbor there, the other side. When we are frigid just here within 5 minutes, we are frigid just even the fire was reaching here.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The International Aviation Organization says it is concerned about the safety of civil aircrafts operating in South Sudan's airspace. In a letter dated January this year, the Secretary General of the International Civil Aviation Organization says, among other risks to safety, the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority lacks qualified air traffic control personnel. An official with Kenya Airways who spoke on condition of anonymity because he is not authorized to speak says it has been difficult for some aircrafts to land at Juba International Airport due to poor communication. But a South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority official says air traffic controllers at Juba International Airport are qualified and work effectively. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
In her January 20th communique, ICAO Secretary General Fang Liu directed appropriate state authorities of aircraft operators which use South Sudan airspace to, quote, communicate to civil aircraft owners and operators intending to operate within the airspace under the authority of the Republic of South Sudan the need to fully assess the potential for risks to flight safety, end quote. Liu says the International Civil Aviation Organization received information from a variety of sources indicating there had been disruptions to air traffic services and related supporting services within South Sudan airspace without adequate contingency arrangements in place. Liu says there are not enough qualified air traffic controllers. Aeronautical information about out-of-service or withdrawn navigation equipment is not being regularly communicated, and air-to-ground communications are, in her word, inadequate. A Kenya Airways official who spoke on condition of anonymity because he is not authorized to speak says it has been difficult for some aircraft to land at Juba International Airport because of poor communication, as air traffic controllers do not always respond promptly. The official also says sometimes there are goats or birds on the runway. Ethiopian Airlines area manager Bekalo Kasa says captains from his airline have not experienced any major problems with air traffic control or ATC when landing or departing from Juba International. Kasa says Ethiopian Airlines officials ensure that any technical problem is fixed on the spot.
There could be some incidents, but we're operating our flights normally, like the other airlines. But if there is any issue with ATC, the machines and everything, we normally report it to the civil aviation in the airport authorities, and then they usually fix it. So far, I don't remember any case of miscommunication or delay on reply.
UN Humanitarian Air Service, or UNHRS, which is managed by the World Food Programme, operates most of its flights from Juba International to various destinations across South Sudan. When asked about their experience flying through South Sudan airspace, WFP's head of communications in South Sudan, Marwa Watt, said in an email, To quote, WFP, the UN agency mandated to provide humanitarian and non-peacekeeping related air services to the UN and NGO community, works closely with the ICAO and all national civil aviation authorities, including those where our leased aircraft are registered, to ensure we are able to maintain safe aviation services on behalf of our users. End quote. In December 2020, South Sudan's Defense Ministry took over operations at Juba International after air traffic controllers at the airport went on strike demanding renewal of their operating licenses, more air traffic control equipment, and payment of their wages in arrears. Engineer Saleh Akot, deputy manager at Juba International's control tower, says his office has not received the ICAO's communique. But Akot insists the country's air traffic controllers are competent.
It is not true. We have the head of the control and another staff. There are two who have license. These two guys, it is them who monitor the trainees. We have 30 trainees, students, who have been trained in Nairobi, but they didn't receive their license. They are supposed to go for control area. But they have been trained. Now they are working with the police, the head of the controllers and other senior controller. So our health space is controlled by our civilization two controllers who have licensed.
A court did not disclose whether the air traffic controllers deployed at the airport are from the Defense Ministry or if the former controllers who had gone on strikes were reinstated. Leo says ICAO is concerned for the overall safety of international air traffic and is urging aircraft operators to assess flight safety risks while in South Sudan airspace. She assured aircraft operators that the ICAO's primary objective is the safety and security of international civil aviation. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Traders in Juba's Jebel Market are counting their losses after a fire gutted 10 hardware shops, destroying building materials worth more than $500,000. Trader Said Ali Abdallah, who owned 7 of the destroyed shops, says he learned of the fire at around 4 a.m. local time and rushed to the market. He says he only rescued a few items. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Juba trader Said Ali Abdullahi says he owns 7 of the 10 hardware shops destroyed by fire earlier this morning. He says he heard about the fire from his brother, who was called by a police officer that was guarding the shops.
It was just the morning and 4:46, just the 5 to 15 minutes. There is a policeman who slept there. He has called me and he told me there is a fire. We just started just our neighbor there, the other side. When we are frigid just here within 5 minutes, we are frigid just even the fire was reaching here.
Abdullah says he has no idea what caused the fire. He says he had stocks various building materials, including cement, timber, and iron sheet in his shops. Abdullah estimates he lost nearly $400,000 worth of building materials in the fire.
Before 1 month, we have calculated in dollar. In dollar, it was just like $250,000. $250,000. And before, after that time, even we have brought other materials, just like timbers. For 3 trailers, we brought cement, we brought 4,500 of different iron sheets.
Isam Rabi, another Jebel Market trader, says he too lost a great deal of money in today's fire. Rabi says he is disappointed that the fire brigade arrived too late to save the shop.
When we and our brothers from the police, national security, and the chairperson of the business community came here, they called the fire brigade, but unfortunately when the fire brigade arrived here, it was late as the fire had already consumed all the shops. The shops which got burned here today have cements, timbers, and hardware. And behind our shop, There is a big store for all imported materials from China.
Major General Daniel Justin, South Sudan National Police spokesperson, told South Sudan in Focus he was feeling unwell and will not comment. Colonel Doug Carlo, deputy spokesperson for South Sudan National Police Service, was not reachable by phone for comment. No injury were reported in this morning's fire. Jebel Market, located in Jebel residential area, it is the second largest market in Juba after Konyokonyo. What appear to be accidental fire have been somewhat common in Juba's market. Last year, several shops in a market of Juba's Gudele 2 suburb were destroyed in a fire. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
South Sudan's Minister for Culture, Youth and Sports says Women's Soccer League will promote peaceful coexistence among various communities across the country. A Confederation of African Football consultant on women's football says the launching of the league gives hope to many young women across South Sudan. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Hundreds of men, women and children watched as the Awil women and the Juba superstars squared off in the first match of the South Sudan Women's Football League on Saturday at Bullock Playground in Juba. The superstars beat the Awil women by 2-0, with Susie Michael scoring the first goal of the league before Emanuela Satiro doubled for the hosts in the 70th minute of the second half. In the second round of games on Sunday, Bentiu United won 1-0 against Kwajok women. Yei Joint Stars won 3-0 against the Yambio women in Yambio. And the hosts, Torit women, thrashed the Wa women 8-0. Torit tops the table on goal difference after the first round. Yei is in second place and the Wa women are at the bottom of the table. Francis Amin, president of the South Sudan Football Association, says what had been a long uphill battle has finally turned out to be a dream come true.
Today is a historic day in South Sudan. We have registered it for the first ever South Sudan League, and which is recognized in the system by the FIFA. We have made it today, and congratulations to the whole team. We have started the beginning with the training of the coaches, administration, and now we have kicked off the league. The next, we are going to receive the coach for the national team.
Uganda national Gene Sinende is a Confederation of African Football, or CAF, consultant on women's football, who has been hired by the South Sudan Football Association to provide technical guidance. She says launching the league gives hope to many young women across South Sudan and for women's football in the region.
Because if we don't start, then we'll never see where we can improve. So we've started the matches. Now, every match, hopefully, we can work with the coaches who we trained in January so that we can help them on how to improve with also their game plan, technically, tactically, mentoring them so that they can transfer that onto the girls that they are training. So in January, we trained over 90 coaches in our strategy.
With those 90 coaches, Sinende says the strategy is to have them teach players across the country to develop the Women's League. On February 10th, the SSFA appointed South African national Shelene Boysen as South Sudan's first female head coach of the Bright Starlets, the senior women's national football team. South Sudan's men's team is the Bright Stars. Sinende says the league will be key for FIFA's licensed coach to watch, identify talented players, and determine where the South Sudan's women's team can improve. Boysen, who holds a CAF A license, recently served as performance analyst for South Africa's team at the 2020 COSAFA Women's Championship. She is expected to arrive in Juba later this week to head up the Bright Starlets. Sinende says the league is creating a platform for many young girls in South Sudan to exercise their talent. She says she would like to see South Sudanese women's teams become the best in East Africa. Before she was a football consultant, Sinende played in England in the FA Women's National League for Queen's Park Rangers and Crystal Palace. She also played for the Charlton Athletic Women's Club and the London Phoenix Ladies FC. She says all South Sudanese, including parents, guardians, and men should support girls and give them the opportunity to showcase their talent instead of marrying them off at a young age.
You could see from the talent and the fans who came here today, even when they were not allowed to, that the desire is there to support women's football. Now we hope we can continue changing the mindsets and the perceptions of everybody, that women can do much more than just stay at home, get pregnant, get married off. I think we need to change that perceptions, because from my own story, it shows that you can be a player, you can be an administrator. There is so much more than just a game.
South Sudan's culture, youth and sports minister, Dr. Albino Ball, says the Women's League is important because it encourages South Sudanese from various communities to interact with each other.
Peace cannot be achieved if we are not socializing among ourselves. Socialization among our tribes through a peaceful coexistence is what will bring peace. And sport is one of the social activities that can bring peace to the whole nation in a very simple way. So I want to thank the FIFA and the CAF and the Football Association of South Sudan and the leadership of Francis Amin for coming up with this great event.
The league has 8 football clubs, the Juba Superstars, the Ye Joint Stars, the Yambia Women FC, the Awil Women, Kwajok Women, the Wa Women, the Torit Women, and Bentiu United. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, what are some of the myths about COVID vaccines? Stay tuned for details on that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is most special about you?
I don't like disappointing people because of my actions. The way it pained me when somebody has disappointed me, I think about the same pain that I will cause to someone whom I have disappointed.
I'm someone who is very friendly, and I can interact with different people without considering their conditions and their status.
One thing special about me, I love the way God has created me, and I love being myself. I don't need to disguise myself like somebody, or I don't need to put myself, pretend like someone. I appreciate the way God has created me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we look at the myths behind COVID-19 vaccine. Despite the evidence in favor of COVID-19 vaccine, people the world over have questioned about their safety. Some are reluctant to get immunized. VOA's Carol Pearson helps debunk some of the common myths about these new vaccines.
Scientists around the world have rushed to find a vaccine to protect against the virus that's caused the COVID-19 pandemic. The virus has claimed more than 2 million lives and infected more than 100 million people. Yet despite the proven protection that COVID vaccines offer, people still have doubts about getting one.
I don't know what to believe, to either believe the news, believe social media, believe whatever, you know, is out there, you know?
I'm a little bit skeptical because I want to know, how is it going to affect my immune system?
I don't see why I would take a vaccine for something that I may not ever get.
The skepticism is just as real in sprawling cities like Los Angeles and in the small towns of West Virginia.
The bad part about it is, if it goes wrong and you do get a virus from it, then what?
Some vaccines are made from weakened or dead viruses, but experts say there's no need to worry. Dr. Tosin Goji of the Cleveland Clinic was trained in infectious diseases.
No, it's not going to give you COVID. It's not a live vaccine. You're not going to get a COVID infection.
Although the vaccines are new, Dr. Goji says the technology used to make them is not.
It was initially put together for cancer patients. So it's not like we just found this technology within the past year for COVID. It's something that has been in place. And when the opportunity came, it was like an aha moment. Like, we can use this technology for this.
The World Health Organization has a web page that addresses the myths and concerns about the vaccines and the virus itself, including who can get COVID-19. The answer, everyone. Can certain foods, like garlic, protect against COVID? What about dietary supplements or vitamins? The World Health Organization says there's no evidence they can. And then there's a belief that these vaccines can change your genetic code.
It will destroy your DNA and you'll become part of like a transhuman because they're putting nanoparticles into it.
The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are mRNA vaccines or messenger RNA vaccines. Remember the spike protein on the COVID virus? These vaccines teach our cells how to make a protein or even a piece of a protein that triggers an immune response inside our bodies. Dr. Tosin Goji says these fears are not warranted.
It's not changing your DNA. People think, oh, it's going to change me. And that's why I take the pictures. It's not integrating itself into your DNA. No, it's not changing who you are.
The World Health Organization is calling for massive public education campaigns to address people's concerns and their fears. Experts say vaccines, along with prevention efforts, keeping hands clean, wearing masks, and social distancing, will put an end to the pandemic, but only if people follow these practices. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Still on COVID, Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli appears to be acknowledging the problem of COVID-19 in the country after months of claiming that the virus had been defeated through prayer and steam treatment. While not officially naming the virus, Magufuli on Sunday urged Tanzanians to begin wearing face masks for quote, respiratory illness that are becoming a problem. For VOA News, Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
It is almost a year since Tanzania President John Magufuli declared his country to be free from COVID-19 and said prayer helped to defeat the virus. But on Sunday church mass in the capital Dodoma, Magufuli urged citizens to take precautions, including traditional remedies and wear face masks, but only locally made ones.
Sisi tuchukue tahadhari za kiafya.
We should take health precautions as it was announced, Magufuli says. He said we should put God first, while searching for an alternative, in line with steam inhalation. He said that his own children got sick, some of his little ones got sick, and they recovered. It's all about putting God first, he said, adding that steam inhalation should not be ignored. At the end of last week, Magufuli called on Tanzanians for 3 days of prayer to defeat unnamed respiratory diseases amid warning from the Catholic Church, the U.S. Embassy, and others that Tanzania has seen a deadly resurgence in coronavirus infections. Tanzanians such as Baraka Kila found President's remarks unsettling. Kila says at first they were convinced that it really did not exist. But looking at social networks like Twitter and Facebook, various people were posting about death caused by a coronavirus and it was causing a lot of controversies and the government disagreed. To a large extent, he says we must continue to believe that some of the death that occurred were caused by COVID-19. We are scared because when the president admits the existence of coronavirus, it means it has spread a lot, as Kila. Rachel Nzengo, a student at the University of Dar es Salaam, says the move will awaken those who are not taking the virus seriously in Tanzania.
Watu wengi walikuwa mtu anaishi tu kwa mazoea. Yani mtu hajikingi, hafanyaji.
After the president spoke, she thinks Tanzanians will start to protect themselves. She says that people have been squeezing into community buses without taking precautions. Nzengo adds that she thinks it's a good thing that yesterday Magufuli talked. People will start to protect themselves because we see people dying every day, and they say that there's no disease. Magufuli spoke after the death of the vice president of Zanzibar region, Saif Sharif Ahmad. Hamadi's death drew widespread attention after his party said he had died of COVID-19. Tanzania has refused to track coronavirus cases, so there are no figures on how many people have fallen ill or died from the virus. However, other East African countries have experienced thousands of cases, and there's no reason to think Tanzania has been spared. The president's speech may change people's perceptions and prompt doubters of COVID-19 to take serious precautions for the first time. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Teachers in Malawi's public schools are staging a sit-in strike, refusing to go back to work until the government agrees to pay them bonus for risking COVID-19. Malawi's government last week announced the reopening of schools Tuesday after a 5-week suspension over a surge in COVID-19 cases. Teachers say working during the pandemic puts them at risk, while authorities urge adequate precautions are being taken. For VOA News, Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's schools were due to reopen this week after a 5-week suspension caused by a surge in COVID-19 cases. Teachers reported to work Monday, but refused to begin classes until the government meets their demands for high-risk pay and better protective equipment. In response, students at some schools in central Malawi held street protests against the teachers' strike. Misozi Jumbe is a secondary school learner in Dowa district. She says the teachers' strike is ill-timed.
The strike is not helping. Why were the teachers not doing the strike when we closed the school? We opened the strike. We want to learn. And I am supposed to sit for my MSCE exams, and I'm not happy at all.
Malawi first closed schools in March last year, well before it confirmed its first 3 cases of COVID-19 during the first wave of the pandemic. It reopened the schools in September. The classes were suspended again for 5 weeks in January this year because of a surge in COVID-19 that saw some teachers and learners infected. However, the striking teachers say working during the pandemic puts them at risk. Wile Malimba is president of Teachers Union of Malawi. He says personal protective equipment like face coverings, sanitizers, and soap for hand washing are inadequate in many schools.
Of course, we have seen some schools receive the soap from the government budget, but for sanitizer, not yet. So looking at all these situations, we are saying no, the government is not ready to reopen schools.
Government authorities previously argued adequate precautions were being taken. Announcing reopening of schools during a televised address last Wednesday, Education Minister Agnes Nyalunje said the government has allocated about $6 million to the school's reopening program.
My ministry has made money available directly to schools through zonal accounts for them to procure soaps, to procure masks, to procure buckets where buckets need replacing, to make sure that when schools open, these things are in place.
Malimba said Monday he could not tell when the teachers will resume work. However, he said a meeting between government authorities and teachers' representatives was underway in the capital, Lilongwe, to find the best solution to the teachers' strike. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your short comments to our WhatsApp number +1 202 630 8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Loso. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Lo sono, 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 lo
madingwani atomini miariti mwado leba kumukono gamu jangwa leba kumukono gamu jangwa kama ukona mukono gamu wewe siyo rafiki yangu wewe siyo rafiki yangu nasema wewe siyo rafiki yangu.